Life's a game. The world's a stage, and we are merely role players where theatrical people play role-playing games. I'm Matt Boothman, and I'm your compere for this main house production. Here on Merely Role Players, we improvise stories to entertain ourselves and also yourselves. And we use role-playing games to keep the story going places even we can't see coming, because, as theatrical people, we want things to be all drama, all the time. This episode is part of our current main house production, Vigil, Ill Wind. To create this story, we're playing Monster of the Week, a role-playing game by Michael Sands, published by Evil Hat. So please take your seats in the main house. Tonight's production is about to begin. Vigil. A Merely Roleplayers main house production. Ill Wind. Act 3 of 5.
I'm Ellie and I play Peggy Taylor, the Crooked. She's travelled the world for the last 20 years, running impressive cons with her grifter network. The last job, though, it went bad. Real bad. And she's come home to lie low.
I'm Nat and I play Gwynedd, the Divine. Gwyn was once a shield maiden of the triple goddess, the Morrigan. After interfering with one of her schemes by rescuing a mortal man, the Morrigan banished Gwyn to live life as a duck in what became Sherrydown's Duck Pond. Now released from her curse thousands of years later, Gwyn is trying to forge a new life, but is finding it difficult to stay under the radar.
I'm Vicky, and I play Renko the Flake. Renko is a doom agent on furlough who was assigned to Sheridan and is now convinced something significant is happening in town.
Hi there, my name's Alexander Pankhurst and I play Graham the Summoned. Graham's just your average accountant, who happens to be a demon, and is destined to bring about the apocalypse.
An ill wind blows through Sheridan.
I'm afraid there's magic in that.
Something alchemical.
I've got something you want, Peggy, darling.
The tip is coming to town, flowing across the ground. All the grass and the asphalt of the road that it has passed across is dead, acid burned. Renko, now that you're getting closer to this, the stink is starting to physically affect you. Your eyes are watering, your throat is burning. You feel like if you get any closer to this thing, you're going to start choking and retching and it's going to be difficult to be near. Graham's unaffected.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're fine. I would like to use one of my tokens
from Connect the Dots
to ask if this is connected to previous mysteries that we have investigated.
Mm-hmm. In a sense. Just sort of going off Renko's instincts, first of all, you've tackled threats that sort of, like the figment sharks in Playtime, like that had a malevolent intelligence behind it, like that was a plot, right? And Max Dashwood, he was a villain, he was intentionally doing bad stuff. Other stuff that's happened in town, like the Barguest, for example, like there was some bad intent there, but nobody intended to summon a Barguest. You're not getting like an instinct that someone's behind this. This feels like accident rather than intent. And then another way of answering, like, is this tied to previous mysteries? You can actually see glittering among the rubbish that is being borne along towards town. Some of those pendants and wards and home threshold talismans and stuff like that that you've been seeing around town. It's connected to previous mysteries in that previous mysteries have made people turn to the supernatural for protection, but people don't fully understand those old mm-hmm. ways. You know, there's a lot of forgetfulness in the intervening generations, and it looks like people might have been a little bit careless with mm-hmm. some of those items.
Yeah, which you shouldn't just throw in your regular domestic bin. There's not a space for those at the tip.
We need to put that in the magical waste bin.
We haven't come up with a colour of bin for that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd hope purple.
So this is an unintended consequence of people going back to these old ways.
It's connected to previous mysteries in that there is this snowball effect mm-hmm. in Sheridan and, you know, in the wider country spiralling out from here of just like more and more stuff happening because of the last thing that happened.
I think I am going to ask, what is our best way in?
Great question.
I shall be holding, what's our best way out, Flynn?
let's say creature mm-hmm. for want of a better thing. Like, it doesn't seem like a tide of gunk is moving naturally and it's bearing stuff along with it. It's like, this is a creature that is moving mm-hmm. with intention. This kind of whole puddle about a kilometre and a half in diameter, basically the whole tip crawling towards Sheridan. It is gunk and then stuff like embedded in the gunk being borne along in it. Your best way in, if you wanted to say get to the heart of the matter physically, you know already you do not want to touch the gunk. But there are enough kind of big fridges and sofas and like patches of glass bottles and that sort of thing, that there are sort of islands in it. They're shifting because the whole thing mm-hmm. is in motion. But it looks like it would be possible, though very dangerous, to walk across it and hop from solid island to solid island without getting in the corrosive part.
Feels like we need somebody who has wings to help us out.
Graham is just very going to tentatively dip a toe, as it were, into the... Because he's like, he's...
You might be all right.
Yeah. I might be fine, and I don't really know. Mm-hmm. The smell and all the noxious fumes, I've got a little halo of flies. Maybe this is good for me.
Maybe.
Yeah, pestilence sees pestilence and goes, okay, this is
so
fine.
So I'm just going to... You see... Again, because you probably don't ever see Graham in his true form. You've seen him once.
One time. There was enough.
One time was enough.
More than enough.
Just when I know that Renko isn't looking at me directly on, he just reaches out a tentacle and just puts it into the...
Pop it in.
like an octopus when they're sort of like feeling out for stuff. And you just see this like...
Can you roll plus cool, please, to act under pressure?
Oh, I got plus one there.
Yeah.
Oh. That is a
Alex,
magical five.
The dice don't like you today.
No.
They do
you
not.
You were a little XP machine, though, weren't you?
Yeah, boy.
I'm excited to see what this looks like.
See what happens.
So, Graham, you descend the knoll, get closer, and you reach out just to a very tentative touch to this thing. Here's the good news. You don't feel the sting of like acidic decomposition.
Good.
It doesn't feel like
the
chemical nature of this thing does not seem corrosive to your demon body. But the magic in it does.
Oh.
It's full of warding talismans. It's being animated by these things. And they're mostly the sort of thing that people put up to ward against things like you.
Yeah. That's demon acid right there.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is I feel very oppressed.
And also, so the two of you have been observing this thing for a couple of minutes, at least before Graham made this move, and seeing it just sort of bimbling at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not moving very quickly. It doesn't seem to have any sense organs of any kind. It's just sort of feeling its way forward in the direction of the town. Who knows what's driving it in any particular direction? But as soon as you touch it, all around the area of it where you've made contact suddenly bursts into motion. And it rears up this almost like a wave coming into the beach, like a great horrible kind of flap of it.
Ugh.
Rears up.
Oh, I've never recoiled at the word flap before.
Oh. You find yourself looking into this kind of maw.
Okay.
Studded with, instead of, it has no teeth, but it does have like sticking out of all surfaces, like wads of wet paper and spikes of broken glass and the spines of shopping trolleys and all of the other sort of horrible stuff you find at the tip. And Renko, still at the top of the grassy knoll, watches helpless as this flap collapses down on top of Graham, swallowing him entirely.
Oh, no. Oh.
Quick question. How much harm will I be taking?
Well, you reminded us before we started recording that you're very tough. And so that's going to work for you, because before that reduces the harm, you're taking 6.
Oh, my God.
From a combination, as your body is simultaneously burned by the protective magic animating this thing, and also like physically pummeled by like fridges and broken glass and all of the like hard stuff that is in this.
-2. So I've got 2 armor. -2. So I take immediately 4 harm.
Does that take you straight to unstable?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
that takes anyone straight to unstable. That
which makes sense, because unstable means that, you know, without taking action to help yourself, you'll just start taking harm just by doing stuff. Which makes sense because you are enveloped in an acidic environment
for both humans and demons.
Okay, I am immediately going to use a point of luck to reduce the harm.
This is a use of luck that we haven't actually used before.
The
second thing you can do with luck is just to ignore an instance of harm.
Is it all harm?
Is it all harm?
It's all for me.
Yeah,
all harm from a source. Injury.
So that is another... Jesus.
How far are we through your luck?
We've got two boxes left.
We've got two boxes left.
It might happen this game.
Given that this thing has just delivered 4 points of damage to me...
So you take no harm, you can wipe out all that harm you've put
in. I've done that.
I think what that looks like, you still failed that roll, so you're still getting like attacked, you're still getting swallowed.
Yeah.
As it comes down on you, you just find yourself in like a pocket. Maybe a fridge comes down on you with its door open.
Yes.
And you're just in the fridge now.
In the fridge.
There's none of the stuff in there to burn you, and you don't get bludgeoned by it. It just comes down on you falls and closes. And so you're like...
It's a chest freezer. Yeah. It's a chest freezer that I've just got like straight on top of
it's
me.
It's an old chest freezer. So you're still in this thing's body, but you're in this safe pocket. And do you have a new sign of the apocalypse in mind?
I think that given that one of them here is the seas boil. So it doesn't say what seas. And I think I'm kind of in a sea of detritus. Those things start boiling around me.
The whole form of this thing starts to bubble. Like Renko, you can see, like I said, this thing was sort of edging forward like at its own pace. As soon as Graham touched it, the whole thing has come alive. It seems angry now. Every liquid part of its form is bubbling angrily. And Gwyn, passing over Sheridan, you see manhole covers start to burst off of streets as something else beneath the streets boils with it.
Okay.
Totally made a bad situation worse here, didn't
we? Yeah.
But Graham didn't take any harm.
You know,
so that's good.
In many ways, perfect.
How close did we say that Renko was to the mass?
Renko, I think you were still up on the grassy knoll, right?
So you've definitely got close enough to touch it.
Yeah, up there with the minibus, so you've got a little bit of height.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would save what's the best way out, and maybe that now is the time to ask that question.
Yeah, as the liquid parts of it are bubbling, it is surging at greater speed towards the town, and so it flows around the knoll you're on. So the route that you came up onto the knoll in the minivan is closed off by Ick.
Which I probably can't drive through.
Well,
I mean, I could give it a go.
seeing that the knoll has got surrounded by all this, I've arrived too late to actually see anything happen with Graham.
Yeah.
That's fine.
You just see a chest freezer on the floor.
And you literally, you don't know that I've been here, that I was here. No. You don't know where I am now. So you're happy.
I just see Renko in trouble, surrounded on a hill by Goop. And I'm going to fly down and grab you. And I'm not going to teleport away, but I will fly up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's...
Up is good.
There's not even a chat. There's just you suddenly looking and seeing all this happening with Graham. You suddenly feel...
But before your mouth can even form the word mother.
Yes. I'm just thinking about it for the first time, probably.
Like arms grab you around the stomach and you're suddenly flying above this. Hello, it's been a while.
Oh, in the nick of time, Gwyn. Graham is in that freezer in there. He's in...
Did he cause this?
I'm not 100% on that one way or another, but he was coming this way to investigate, which makes me think that he didn't know this was happening, but that doesn't mean he didn't cause it. So the jury is still out on that one. Either way, I think we probably should try and get him out of the freezer, though.
Very well.
I mean, he's probably quite happy in there for now. In a manky old freezer at the tip.
Yeah,
I mean,
lovely old time.
Graham's dream spa day.
Graham, unbeknownst to you, has found a very old packet of chicken nuggets that he's merrily just popping into his mouth.
Oh, absolutely. Dream day.
There's like some smears of like old melted and then frozen and then melted Viennetta.
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't want to leave. He's good.
Yeah, he's actually okay at the moment.
This is the luckiest freezer situation.
Are there any other innocent bystanders that are remotely close to being in trouble here?
It doesn't look like it. You passed over the high street where you saw a little knot of people starting to march in this direction.
Yeah.
I think you actually saw them coming out of one of the high street shops, arms full of packets of rubber gloves.
Sure.
And sort of looking around for transport, but nobody is close enough other than Renko to be injured.
I will go from sort of holding you in front to sort of just casually, like, there's always like you pass through a wing without really realizing it, but you get flipped onto her back. Hold on. And I'm going to fly closer to try and...
Like, see if we can...
Try if I can just,
freezer.
Like... the staff into it and prize this freezer open.
Don't forget, you've got the megaphone, so you can communicate.
Oh, yeah, I have got the megaphone. That's true. I do currently have a megaphone.
Gwyn swoops towards the freezer. Peggy.
Hello.
How are you feeling about your decision to go in the opposite direction to all of this?
I mean, Peggy feels fine about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Ellie, it's very uncomfortable.
Peggy, you arrive at the Duck and Parsnip.
Mm.
It's sort of getting towards evening. It's starting to fill up. You know, this is basically the one place in town that people can still come for an evening's entertainment with some power. And through the crowd at the end of the bar, with three empty glasses and one full of Chardonnay in front of her, you see Vampire Val.
Four drinks, Vampire Val.
Yeah.
With a peroxide blonde blowout... With the puffy sleeves gathered at the wrist and then puffing out again, lacy style. Makeup slightly skew-iff after all of those Chardonnays. As you walk in the door, she, rather than, as she has been doing, coyly disappearing on you, raises her free hand up above the crowd, wiggles her fingers and goes, "Here, babes, over here!"
Peggy winces slightly, but then puts a smile on and strides on over.
Oh, thanks for joining me, babes. How you been? What can I get you?
Oh,
this one's on me.
Oh, that's very kind. I'll just have a rum and coke, please.
Rum and coke for my friend here.
So you've been quite elusive.
Look, I just wanted you to. I wanted to feel like you wanted to say hello. You know.
Oh. Right. Oh,
it's nice to feel pursued sometimes, you know? Even by a friend.
You've been reading those dating blogs again.
I get take a break every week.
Yeah, I remember. Tricky crosswords.
Now, look, babes. We did not part on the best terms. I think you'd agree with that, right?
That's...
I expect it was probably a surprise that I reached out to you like this.
Sure, yeah. Really surprised, yeah. Yeah. Peggy's so baffled by all of this.
Look, I heard on the grapevine that you were back in the country, and the first feeling I had, babes, was hurt. Hurt all over. It opened the old wounds all over again, babes, that you didn't say hello as soon as you were back on our green English shores.
Well, I wouldn't want to put a friend at risk, you see.
There's that word. Are you ready, Peggy? Are you ready to really be friends? Because what we had before, I thought it was real, but you knew it was fake, didn't you? But time heals wounds, and I'm ready to forgive and forget, Peggy, if you would like to make what we had something real. Your rum and coke arrives.
As we always used to say, Val, live, laugh, love.
She mouths it along with you. She knew what you were going to say.
How can Val live, laugh, love? She's dead.
Leaning real hard into the second and third there.
mostly loving and laughing.
Yeah.
Dancing while no one's watching. I like saying it along with you and then nodding like it's such a profound statement to make about her existence.
Vicky, it is.
Yeah.
Is it? Is it?
She clinks her wine glass with your rum and coke. She doesn't, like, hold it up and invite you to cheers with her. She just bumps her glass against your glass. I'm so happy to hear you say that, babes. You can't even believe. Because friends help each other out, don't they?
Right, Val. I feel like we're leaning into an you ask me a favour situation here.
Oh, no, babes. Exact opposite.
Right, so you're bringing me something that you think is that you're doing me a favour, is that?
I'm gonna offer you something that only a friend would offer. Hear me out, babes, because I can see on your face, babes, you're sceptical.
That is, yes.
And I know this is sudden, but it has to be sudden, babes, because I know you've got that ticking clock.
Right, yeah. Thought we were going biological there, but no. Yeah.
It's a bit personal, Val.
That's the chat that Peggy's been getting from her nana. Yes. This is a different chat entirely.
Your other pressing concerns.
Because did you think, babes, that us creatures of the night, us empresses of evil, don't talk? That we don't hear stuff on the grapevine. I heard about that deal you made, babes. I know you accepted some pretty testing terms. And I know Peggy Taylor. Even though she was not giving me the old truth before.
Well, that's for sure.
I feel like I know you. And I know that you must be thinking of all your angles and avenues and ways out of it. How you're going to get out of his deal.
It's definitely been on my to-do list, that's for sure, but it's not been at the top, I have to say. I'm intrigued to know what you've heard on the old dead grapevine.
Only the basics, babe. Only the headlines. Peggy Taylor owes the devil her soul in less than a year.
Right, well that doesn't help me, does it?
Oh, but this does. And we've been saying it's been sort of afternoon shading into evening.
Mm.
And it's at this moment that the sun fully sets.
Oh, and she's three glasses deep.
You see Val's canine teeth extend into sharp pointed vampire fangs.
Yeah.
She stands. Standing, she's still not taller than you on your bar stool. But she stands and does her best, like, grandiose vampire pose. Melodramatic, like the frills of the blouse. She holds out a hand like Hamlet holding Yorick's skull and intones to you, I offer you, true friend of my heart, the crimson gift.
I'm not being funny, Val, but that is a terrible name. That just sounds like you're offering me a tampon.
I've got some in my bag as well, if you need them, darling.
Why have you got them?
I need to soak up blood sometimes, babes.
That's fair.
I do not offer this lightly, so do not consider it lightly. Do not give me your answer now, babes. Consider it. I will give you 3 days to give me your answer, whether you will accept my crimson gift.
Right, so just so we're clear here, you're offering the crimson gift, and it lasts about 3 days.
No, babes. You've got 3 days to decide.
Right.
And if you say yes, I'll turn you into a vampire.
Oh!
And that means that you don't owe the devil your soul anymore.
Oh.
I'll have it as your sire.
Right.
It's a loophole, babes.
Oh, what a choice.
Wow, a loophole.
That she puts a finger on your lips. You can taste the Chardonnay.
Why? Why is it on her finger?
It's everywhere, Alex. It's everywhere.
Did some finger swirling. No.
Stop fingering your wine, woman.
Seduce the locals.
I said, do not answer now, babes. Think carefully, and give me your answer. I will remain in town for the span of 3 days before I leave, and the offer is off the table forever, babes.
Peggy's going to firmly but gently remove her finger from her lips and stay holding her hand and kindly say, I've just got one question, Val. What would you being my sire entail?
She rummages in her handbag for a leaflet. It looks like it's like a zine, like it's sort of hand set out and then photocopied.
Uh-huh.
But before she can give it to you, the sink behind the bar explodes. And you hear screams from behind the bar. You hear screams from the toilets.
The pool's going back in!
Oh, Jesus. My sphincter is melting!
Oh, no.
From the bar sink, where they empty all of the dregs of all of the drinks, a geyser of liquid erupts and starts spilling over the bar onto the across the bar stools, onto the bar carpet, spreading out. And you see that it's not just moving like inert fluid. As it spills onto the carpet, it starts to coalesce together and group up and get taller, almost into the shape of like a creme caramel.
Oh boy.
A blancmange.
A waist height blancmange of stuff erupting out of the sewer pipes.
Oh.
There's not enough tampons for that.
No.
In the moment that all of that noise happens, Val is gone.
Oh, God's sake. Yeah.
Leaving you only with this slightly damp pamphlet in your hand.
Damp with Chardonnay, I assume. Yeah. I'm going to shove the pamphlet in my back pocket.
Everybody's pulling back to the extremities of the wall.
Have people been hit with the stuff?
It looks like Will, Jess's dad behind the bar.
These poor people.
Yeah.
Has been lightly splashed. It's harder, you know, in that limited space behind the bar to get out of the splash zone. People by the bar, a couple of people who were like barflies sitting at the stools.
Yeah.
You can see like some clothing has been burnt away and you can like hear some screams of pain and sort of bubbling and that sort of thing. Most people have pulled back to the walls or like are starting to spill out of the exits already as this blancmange in the middle of the carpet starts to wobble in various different directions, almost like it's sort of scenting and deciding where to go.
So people are managing to get out okay.
This thing is like, other than people who got splashed in the initial explosions and sort of took some injuries from that, people are not finding it difficult to elude or evade
this thing aren't trapped and stuff.
Nobody's trapped. Will is in the worst position because he's already going for like the flap where he can get out from behind the bar.
Okay. So I don't have to test the limits of how selfish Peggy is at this point because no one's in imminent danger. I'm going to also make an exit.
Because there's panic and there's crowd and there's only so many exits, and sort of where you were at the end of the bar with Val, you are going to have to kind of skirt this thing to get to a decent exit. Just give us a roll plus cool and act under pressure.
Oh, it's a 3 and a 2 plus 1, so that's a 6.
That's a 6. Oh dear.
Oh dear. But I don't want to start getting harm at this point because I feel like there's going to be a lot of that later. So I'm going to take luck. I reckon I can get up to my room and then out the back exit.
Great, yeah. You've been staying here, you know the back ways. Yeah. You can get up those stairs and then either out the window or out a back exit or something like that.
Yeah.
Peggy gets away clean. As you get out into the open, you can see people spilling out of other buildings. Like, perhaps this is not just limited to the Duck and Parsnip, but is maybe happening in other homes and businesses too.
Great.
High in the stinking air.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any sort of strips of fabric coming off, Gwyn, that Renko can sort of put over your nose and mouth.
To catch myself in the
stench. Hopefully that will help. I don't know. But yeah, I'm just going to fly down towards this fridge and trying to use my quarterstaff to kind of lever it open.
Great. I think this is going to be a protect someone roll, yeah. Which is a plus tough.
Which
I think that's pretty good.
Great result for Gwyn.
Usually in my wheelhouse, but the dice may have other decisions. The dice have other decisions. Well, no, it's still a seven.
It's a seven. Okay.
What it means that this is a mixed success rather than a full success is that you can't do this as a flyby,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't swoop down in one fluid motion, flip the lid open and grab Graham out and fly away. Sure. You have to land.
Oh.
So you're going to have to land on the freezer.
I've got a Renko.
Yeah. You could put me on the top of the minibus. Yeah.
Or, you know, on some nearby island of stuff in this boiling
sure.
sea in order to get the leverage to get the freezer open and get Graham out. You can do that and you do it. And yeah. the freezer pops open and the smell of old chicken nuggets joins the general miasma. A cloud of flies flies out of the freezer and forms into the shape of a haloed crown as Graham sits up out of the freezer. And now that you've landed and started sort of swinging things around and popping that freezer open, there is movement in the mass where all you've really seen so far is like perambulation. Like it's a big flat puddle and it's been moving. Parts of it gather together into some sort of like limb or tentacle or mound and take a swipe at you, Gwyn, for two harm.
Reduced to one.
It's just like a swipe as you're flying by. You could have avoided this if you were able to do it as a swoop.
Yeah.
Just because you had to land to get the leverage that it's able to reach you to hit you with this.
She would have gone to do a flyby, noticed how dangerous it would be. Because this is still relatively quick at the speed mm-hmm. that she can fly. Dropped you back off on top of the bus.
Yeah.
And then gone to the freezer, landed on it, flipped it open. Yeah, if that thing like has swiped at her leg, mm-hmm. as she's distracted by the halo of flies that you've got just kind of coming into my face. I guess I would swing round and kind of just give it a sort of an offhanded beat with the quarterstaff to see, mm-hmm. see what that does.
Roll kicks some ass. Plus tough again.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
That's
more like
it. A 12.
As you take this swing, you can see sort of this pseudopod has swiped at you. It's given you a bit of a smack on the leg. It's done some damage. Now that sort of whatever kind of intelligence this thing has, that was kind of exploratory. It was instinctive. Now that it's swiped and the threat has not gone away and the threat is winding up to attack it back,
mm-hmm.
you see a bigger swell of stuff coming together, currents, almost like a whirlpool that then rises up, forming this kind mm-hmm. of towering pillar of waste.
Great.
That pseudopod that hit you before was mostly just like tissues and liquid and horrible, nasty yeah. ick. This tower that it's rearing up over you has got like shopping trolleys and other like hard stuff in it.
Yeah.
Bits of masonry from DIY waste. So this one's got a bit more heft.
Great. Yeah, this is great decisions. I've made great, great choices. I'm going to go for I suffer less harm.
Great.
In this situation. it will take four harm, holy fire.
Ooh. Four harm from you as you deal a mighty blow yeah. with your holy flaming quarterstaff.
Holy flaming quarterstaff.
As the staff comes down on it, you're seeing sort of this kind of reforming moment to moment, this whole thing is shifting.
Yeah.
As the staff comes down on it, it shifts some of the bulkier debris into the path of the blow to shield itself, mm-hmm. to absorb some of that strike. So it takes 2 damage rather than 4.
Okay.
So this would have been 5, minus that from kicks and ass and minus your armor.
Okay, yeah. She sort of spun to to sort of give it a whack with the butt end of the quarterstaff, but in doing so sees that big tower coming in and is able to use that momentum to step out of the way, grab Graham's hand, tentacle, just a chunk of Graham. And I would love to, like, start flying away, but maybe, I mean, Graham's heavy, I guess. I probably can carry flying, but heavy.
You have carried me before.
You have done before.
Oh, yeah, it was very unpleasant.
Yeah, you didn't like it.
Yeah.
And in fact, flying away is your only choice, because doing this, like the shifting sands of this thing, you no longer have a perch.
Yeah.
As soon as these two attacks have connected, you on it and it on you, and you've got Graham, the ground is giving away beneath your feet and attempting to, like, tip you into the corrosive goo.
And I think it's just as I lift up and grab Graham, it probably just catches like a leg as I'm flying away.
This isn't like, you know, it trying to grab. This is just a straight bludgeon with some of the hard stuff in this tentacle.
Like we do like a sort of a staggered spin in the air while I try and regain my sense of up. and then we fly towards Renko. Can I... Am I okay to... I'm not trying to teleport, but can I carry both of them?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The quarterstaff just kind of... She spins it and puts it behind her, and it just disappears into the ether. The magic pocket. Yeah. And I'll just fly by the bus, grab Renko, and just fly away.
The time spent on top of the bus watching all of this unfold and feeling pretty useless has given Renko some thinking time. Mm-hmm. Renko has noticed the number of talismans and wards and things coming up around town. She's been keeping an eye on the tailors. She's seeing it all in this rubbish tip, and she is piecing things together and seeing what it did to Graham as well, imbuing this normally disgusting heap of junk with some kind of, like, magical power. So she's thinking the best way to neutralize it would be to extract all of the magical items. And it puts her in mind of how things actually work at the tip, where you take a giant magnet and hover it over and attract all of the metal. And so Renko is wondering if there would be a magical way, but we would need to have a conversation with some people who know how to do magic, who aren't Renko, a magical way to, like, draw out the magical items, and if that would in some way neutralise the goop.
I'm thinking, as we're flying away, as soon as we're clear of this thing and distinctly clear, if there's any sort of place in the town, there's no sort of civilians nearby, like a side street or something that I can find. Because I think it's just going to be a land in the street, and it's just a flurry of feathers lands. And in that flurry of feathers, Renko has appeared very delicately and gently next to Gwynedd, but Graham has been hurled into the nearest wall.
Yeah.
And then, like in a horror film, as soon as you kind of look up slightly, Gwynedd has gone from standing about 15 to 20 feet away from you to being right up in your face. What have you done?
All right, lovies. I hope you enjoyed Act 3 of Vigil Ill Wind. 2 more acts to go. There'll now be an interval of 2 weeks before Act 4. Stay tuned now for the credits and the epilogue. And I feel like I should mention on the subject of the epilogue that Ellen and I did not stack the deck. The tarot cards we're drawing in those epilogues are genuinely the result of random draws from a well-shuffled Pamela Coleman-Smith deck. But just before those things happen, I just want to tell you about another sort of merely roleplayers adjacent thing that you can enjoy if you want to. Over on foggyoutline.com, I have started playing some solo roleplaying games in a text format on the blog there, starting with Outliers by Samantha Lee, published by the Far Horizons Co-op. Outliers is a game about weird science. It's for fans of Carlos the Scientist from Welcome to Night Vale, for example, although my character is not a full-fledged scientist yet, just a research assistant who's doing their best but might be slightly out of their depth. I'm publishing my playthrough of Outliers under the title Camera Obscura, and you can find that at foggyoutline.com/serials. That's it for this week. Enjoy that during the interval, but first, here come the credits and the epilogue. Production from Merely Role Players. It stars Ellie Pitkin as Peggy Taylor, Natalie Winter as Gwyneth, Alexander Pankhurst as Graham, and Vicky as Renko, with Ellen Gould as Jess Butterworth. I'm Matt Boothman and I play the supporting cast. Editing and sound design are by me, and the theme music is by Alexander Pankhurst. We were playing Monster of the Week, a role-playing game by Michael Sands, published by Evil Hat Productions. You can find Monster of the Week at genericgames.co.nz. Merely Role Players is a Foggy Outline production in association with Blackshaw Theatre Company. Until next time, if drama be the food of life, play on.
Okay, Kip, card number three. This one's going to be you, your roots, your perspective, your heart in all of this.
Back in the spotlight, Kip turns the top card of the deck. The King of Pentacles, another king. This one's upside down.
Yeah, reversed. King again, Kip. I don't know if this is how you see yourself or how I see you.
I mean, I'm not establishment like that.
No, but look at him, Kit. He's not establishment. He's not like the royals. He's bedecked in vines and armour. A castle behind him. I think that castle's this place.
Kit shudders a little at that.
But look, it's behind him, Kit. He's not in it.
But if that's this place, I'm back here again. It's not behind me anymore.
But last time, you were trapped. And maybe what this card is saying is that this is a passing moment. It's a memory. And if you deal with it, you can be free again. But there's more to him, if you're prepared to hear it.
If we can deal with it this time, and it takes hearing this to do it, go on, hit me.
Well, the King of Pentacles reversed. Traditionally, he's about a lack of self-discipline. He's about vice. He doesn't understand the difference between strength and power. And he lacks impulse control, self-discipline, self-control, and is always grasping onto something, searching for something.
Now, you say lack of self-discipline and poor impulse control. I say freedom. Isn't that what both of us have always wanted? Just be able to do what we want, not what other people tell us we have to.
I mean, sure, in a dictionary, Kit, that's what freedom means. But it comes with agency. It's not just being a ball of power and destruction and mayhem in the world. It's having the choice to make better and do things differently. And do you know what I'm trying to say?
Doing everything I want to do whenever I want to do it always sounded like the ideal life existence.
but it's not as fun as I want it to be. Because doing whatever I want to do, I think it's changed how you see me. There was a ghoul pretending to be me, and it told you in my voice that it was going to push you down in your own mind, take you over and live your life for you while you watched. And it was holding me away, but I could hear it talking and I could still feel what you were thinking. And you believed it. You believed it that I would do that to you. And that fucking hurt. And I blamed you.
Just doesn't say anything for a second. Just keeps his eye contact. Kit, maybe a month at most before that day, you did take over my body, my brain, to achieve whatever your own aims were. And I still haven't forgiven you for that. And then I was so angry. Can you imagine how easy it was for me to believe that ghoul was you, and that maybe the reason that you'd done that to me on the platform was perhaps because you weren't who I thought you were? Because that was easier. It was easier to believe that you were actually a horrible, evil entity right from the very beginning than it was for me to believe that my friend would do that to me.
I did it for another friend.
That's all well and good, but I was powerless, I had no knowledge, and you did it and then abandoned me.
Maybe what this, he looks at the reverse King of Pentacles deeply, maybe what he's trying to tell me is vice and self-control and all of that. Maybe I just can't help hurting anybody that I want to be close to. Because I hurt you to try and get closer to Milton. And then I got closer to Milton and now he's destroyed, gone, forever. You two were the only ones in my life. And he's gone and you hate me. Because of stuff that I did.
Kit, I don't hate you. I don't. I'm angry. But I don't hate you. I can't hate you. And I think to say I can't be close to anyone because maybe that's just who I am, that I hurt people I'm close to, that's lazy. Really lazy. Because maybe if you talked to someone like me, maybe if you told me what was going on, if you told me your history, I could have helped. And I'd have understood how you were feeling. And you wouldn't have had to just take control or act out on your own. Because that's how you hurt people, when people don't understand. When you do things, I don't understand why.
Maybe it's the opposite then. This king, he wears robes and all these vines and shit over his armor. He doesn't want anybody to know he's got the armor on underneath. Maybe it's not the getting close to people hurts them. Maybe it's I'm hiding the armor. I should just get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right.
Jess, I actually think you start to feel that you too have this psychic connection. You are, mm-hmm. you know, bonded. As Kit contemplates the King of Pentacles reversed, you start to feel what you thought was already this clear, intimate psychic bond. You start to feel walls that Kit has had up all this time coming down.
Okay. One more.
How do you solve a problem
like Graham in a fridge?
We said this isn't the musical episode.
And that's why I didn't sing it. Yeah. Peggy, give us your answer too. Didn't eventuate.
Still
not the musical episode.
Yeah, good point.
Sorry. 3 days.
Foggy outline. Undivide your world.